if anyone was still alive. He hooked his finger under the strap of his rifle and pulled it over his head, tucked it against his shoulder. The door clanked free. All he had to do was pull. Chapter 82. There were signs of life and death waiting for him in the hall. A charred ring on the tile and a scatter of ash marked the corpse of an old fire. The outside of the steel door was lined with scratches and marked with dents. The latter reminded him of his misses during Kick the Can, the ineffectual kiss of bullet against solid steel. Right by his feet, Jimmy noticed a stain on the floor, a patch of dappled brown, and remembered a man dying there. Jimmy looked away from these signs of the living and the dying and stepped into the hall. As he began to pull the door shut, something made him hesitate. Jimmy wondered if perhaps his code wouldn't work from the outside. What if the door locked and he could never get back in? He checked the keypad and saw the gouges around its steel plate where someone had tried to prise it off the wall. He was reminded how desperately so many others had wanted in over the years. Remembering this made him feel crazy for wanting out. Before he could worry further, he shut the steel door and his heart sank a little as the gears whirred and the locks slid into the wall. There was a hollow thunk, the sound of awful finality. Jimmy rushed to the keypad, his chest pounding in his throat. The feeling of men running down all three hallways to get him, blood-curdling screams and bludgeoning weapons held high over their heads. He entered the code, and the door whirred open. Pushing on the handle, he took a few deep breaths of home and nearly gagged on the smell of his own waste, warmed by the hot servers. There was no one running down the halls. He needed a new can opener. He needed to find a toilet that worked. He needed overalls that weren't worn to tatters. He needed to breathe and find another stash of canned food and water. Jimmy reluctantly closed the door again. And even though he had just tested the keypad, the fear that he would never get back inside returned. The gears would be worn out. The code would only work from the outside once per day, once per year. A part of him knew, the obsessive part of him knew, that he would check the code 100 times and still worry it wouldn't work the very next. He could check forever and never be satisfied. His pulse pounded in his ears as he tore himself from the door. The hallway was brightly lit. Jimmy kept his rifle against his arm and slid silently past ransacked offices. Everything was quiet except for the buzzing of one light fixture on its last leg and the flutter of a piece of paper on a desk beneath a blowing vent. The security station was unmanned. Jimmy crawled over the gate, remembering Yanni, imagining the stairwell outside crowded with people, a man in a cleaning suit barging out and wading into the masses. But when he opened the door and peered outside, the landing was empty. It was also dim. Only the green emergency lights were on. Jimmy shut the door slowly so that the rusty hinges would groan rather than squeal. There was an object on the grating by his feet. Jimmy nudged it with his boot, a white cylinder the length of his forearm, with knobby ends. A bone. He recognized it from the jumble of a man who had wasted away by the servers, dragged close to his piles of shit. Jimmy felt with keen surety that his own bones would be exposed some day. Perhaps this day. He would never make it back inside his sturdy little home beneath the servers, and this frightened him less than it should have. The heady rush of being out in the open, the cool air and the green glow of the stairwell, even the remnants of another human being, were a sudden and welcome relief from the claustrophobia of being imprisoned. What had once been his pen, the floors and levels of the silo, was now the great outside, Here was a land of infinite death and of hopeful opportunity. Chapter 83. He had no great plan, no real direction, but the tug was upward. His flashlight was running out of juice, so he knew to explore the levels cautiously. Groping in an apartment, he fumbled for a toilet, relieved himself the way God intended, and was disheartened by the lack of a flush. The sink didn't run either. Neither did the wash nozzle beside the toilet, which left him using a bedsheet in perfect darkness. He started up. There was a general store on 19, just below his home. He would check there for batteries, though he feared most useful things would have been consumed by now. The garment district would have overalls, though. He felt sure of that. A plan was forming. Until a vibration in the steps altered it. Jimmy stopped and listened to the clang of footsteps. They were coming from above. He could see the next landing jutting off overhead, one turn around the central post. It was nearer than the landing below, so he ran, rifle clattering against the jugs tied to his makeshift backpack, boots clomping awkwardly on the treads, both fearful and relieved not to be alone. He yanked the doors open on the next landing and pulled them to, leaving a small crack. Pressing his cheek against the door, he peered through the gap, listening. The clanging grew louder and louder. Jimmy held his breath. A figure flew by, hand squeaking along the railing, and then another figure close behind, shouting threats. Both were little more than blurs. He remained in the darkness at the end of a strange and silent hall until the noise faded and he could feel things creeping across the tile toward him, hands with claws reaching through the inky black to tangle up in his wild and long hair, and Jimmy found himself back on the landing in the dull green glow of emergency lights, panting and not knowing what to believe. He was alone. One way or the other. Even if people survived around him, the only company one found was the kind that chased you or killed you. Upward again, listening more closely for footfalls, keeping a hand on the rail for a vibration, he spiraled his way past the water plant on 32, the dirt farm on 31, past sanitation on 26, keeping to the green light and aiming for the general store. The muscles in his legs grew warm from the use, but in a good way. He passed familiar landmarks, levels from another life with an accumulation of wear and a tangle of wires and pipes. The world had grown as rusty as his memory of it. He arrived at the general store to find it mostly bare, except for the remains of someone trapped under a spilled stand of shelves. The boots sticking out were small, a woman's or a child's. White ankle bones spanned the gap between boot and cuff. There were goods trapped underneath the shelf, alongside the person, but Jimmy felt no urge to investigate. He searched the scattering of items on the other shelves for batteries or a can opener. There were toys and trinkets and useless things. Jimmy sensed that many a shadow had fallen over those goods. He saved his flashlight by sneaking out in the darkness. Searching his old apartment wasn't worth the juice either. It no longer felt like home. There was a sadness inside that he couldn't name, a sense that he had failed his parents, an old ache in the center of his mind, like he used to get from sucking on ice. Jimmy left the apartment and continued up. Something still called to him from above. And it wasn't until he got within half a spiral from the schoolhouse that he knew what it was. The distant past was reaching out to him. The day it all began. His classroom, where he could last remember seeing his mother, where his friends still sat in his disordered mind, where, if he remained, if he could just go back and sit at his desk and unwind events once more, they would have to come out differently. Chapter 84. Jimmy kept his flashlight powered up as he made his way to the classroom. There was no going back, he quickly saw. There, in the middle of the room, lay his old backpack. Several of the desks were askew. The neat rows snapped like broken bones, and Jimmy could see in his mind his friends rushing out, could see the paths they took, could watch them spill toward the door. They had taken their bags with them. Jimmy's remained, and lay still as a corpse. A step inside, the room aglow from his flashlight, he felt Mrs. Pearson look up from a book, smile, and say nothing. Barbara sat at her desk, right by the door. Jimmy remembered her hand in his during a class trip to the livestock pens. It was on the way back, after the strange smells of so many animals, hands reaching through bars to stroke fur and feather and fat, hairless pigs. Jimmy had been 14, and something about the animals had excited or changed him. So that when Barbara hung back at the end of the corkscrew of classmates making their way up the staircase and had reached for his hand, he hadn't pulled back. That prolonged touch was a taste of what might have been with another. He brushed the surface of Barbara's desk with his fingertips and left tracks through the dust. Paul's desk, his best friend's, was one of those that had been disturbed. He stepped through the gap it left, seeing everyone leaving at once, his mother giving him a head start, until he stood in the center of the room, by his bag, completely alone. "I am all alone," he said. "I am solitude." His lips were dry and stuck together. They tore apart when he spoke, as if opened for the very first time. Approaching his bag, he noticed that it had been gutted. He knelt down and tossed open the flap. There was a scrap of plastic that his mom had used and reused to wrap his lunch, but his lunch was long gone. 2 corn bars and an oatmeal brownie. Amazing how he remembered some things and not others. He dug deeper, wondering if they'd taken much else. The calculator his father had built from scratch was still in there, as were the glass figurine soldiers his uncle had given him on his 13th birthday. He took the time to transfer everything from his makeshift bag to his old backpack. The zipper was stiff, but it still worked. He studied the knotted coveralls and decided they were in worse shape than the ones he had on, so he left them. Jimmy stood and surveyed the room, sweeping his flashlight across the chaos. On the blackboard, he saw someone had left their mark. He played the light across the scene and saw the word "fuck" written over and over. It looked like a string of letters like that. Fuck, 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 fuck. Jimmy found the erasing rag behind Mrs. Pearson's desk. It was stiff and crusty, but the word still came off. Left behind was a smear, and Jimmy remembered the happy days of writing on the board in front of the class. He remembered writing assignments. Mrs. Pearson complimented him on his poetry once. Probably just to be nice. Licking his lips, he fished a nub of old chalk from the tray and thought of something to write. There were no nerves from standing before the class. No one was watching. He was well and truly all alone. "I am Jimmy," he wrote on the board, the flashlight casting a strange halo, a ring of dim light as he wrote. The nub of chalk clicked and clacked as he made each stroke. It squeaked and groaned between the clicks. The noise was like company, and yet he wrote a poem of being alone, a mechanical act from bygone days. "The ghosts are watching. The ghosts are watching. They watch me stroll alone. The corpses are laughing. The corpses are laughing. They go quiet when I step over them. My parents are missing. My parents are missing. They are waiting for me to come home. He wasn't sure about that last line. Jimmy ran the light across what he'd written, which he didn't think was very good. More wouldn't make it better, but he wrote more anyway. The silo is empty. The silo is empty. It's full of death from pit to rim. My name was Jimmy. My name was Jimmy. But nobody calls me any longer. I am alone. The ghosts are watching. And solitude makes me stronger. The last part was a lie, he knew. But it was poetry, so it didn't count. Jimmy stepped away from the board and studied the words with his flickering flashlight. The words trailed off to the side and dipped down, each line sagging more than the last.